Hello.
Hello, episode, welcome back.
Episode 5 here. Hello.
We've got a bloody great guest here.
Bloody great episode.
He sat right next to me. No, he's not.
He's actually sitting on top of Bingham's head.
Yeah, right on there. Careful, don't move, Jack.
Quite dangerous, really. Quite dangerous with the in the studio.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you've read the title. We always say this in every podcast.
Every,
I don't know why.
Every time.
But yeah, so you've read the title. You know who it is. We're going to have a right old chat here. Lovely guy.
This is...
He took time out of his busy schedule.
Very busy.
Busy schedule,
we
yeah.
We had to book a month in advance.
Yeah. So if you're busy like he is, let us know.
Yeah. This is podcast number 5 with Jake Vernham.
Here we go.
Do the talking. You always do the talking.
Hello, welcome back to Here We Go, the podcast with James and Will.
All right, yeah, it's episode 5 now. That's 5 episodes, pretty mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quarter of a
quarter of twenty. Yeah, we got a guest as well, as you heard there.
And we've got the fabulous Jake Vernham.
Hello there.
Hello.
it's a Saturday. There is some roadworks going on outside. Not right now. They might be on lunch, but they could come back and haunt us.
But the washing machine isn't on. The washing machine's
Bingham's
on
not doing
every single podcast,
load.
But not today. So
I was going to do washing this morning, actually, but I fought against it.
Got to do my sheets.
I did my sheets yesterday. No, I didn't. I did towels. Right, we're digressing. It's all right weather. We got Jake. He went out last night, so he's feeling a bit ropey.
Under the weather.
He's got a cold.
Rough.
You could call it a cold.
Yeah, he's got a cold.
I actually do have a cold, so I feel a bit...
Well, don't give it to me.
I'm a bit throatal at the
moment. Don't pass the cold on, Bingham. We got a lighter lead. Jake's got
before.
A busy lifestyle.
Yeah.
It is very busy at the moment.
Hectic.
To say the least. Very busy.
Rough around the edges.
Not rough around the edges, but busy.
Worked around the edges.
Worked around the edges.
Solid. Solid. Do we want to go for your opening gay bit?
Oh, yeah, the opening gay bit. A much-loved feature by the listeners. Mm. We're on its 5th instalment now, 5th episode. This opening gay bit's just about shoes, really. We had haircuts last time. Just wondering if anyone knows where to get them sort of big, clunky shoes that people wear.
Oh.
I've heard of the Fila Disruptors, but there's another pair that I can't really detect. So if anyone knows, just let me know, or send me a pair.
They aren't creepers, though.
No, not creepers. They're like the trainers. They're like chunky trainers. If you have a pair spare, send them. Cool, cheers.
Solid. That's the opening game bit.
Nice.
It's one of the wild sections
one of the features. Cool.
Oh, cool. Cool, yeah.
Gave it done. Probably cool, put a jingle in there. So, Jake, obviously we mentioned that you're busy. What is it that you do?
I work in live event production on kind of a few different aspects for various projects. So I'm first and foremost, I'm a production manager and a project manager for music concert touring and festival projects. But I also work as a lighting designer for touring and live events as well. So I work on kind of several projects, but doing several different things, if you get what I mean.
Full diary, chocker.
Yeah, which means that just results in me being like busy all of the time.
365.
As opposed to just working on one project.
Yeah, I suppose if you just did festivals, you'd be mad over summer and then pretty quiet in the winter.
Yeah.
Whereas now, because you're doing a bit of this, a bit of that, you can
work. It just
work
means that the diary's full all the time, yeah. Which is good. Like, it's a good way to be.
But at the same time, sometimes it's nice to have a week off every now and then.
It's nice to have a week off every now and again, yeah. It certainly is.
I suppose you get the odd few day, don't you, when you're doing touring. You just don't really get chunks, apart from when they're sort of...
Yeah, in the
split
in
up
the
into
gap,
countries and
in the gaps,
sort of
obviously you get chunks. So I've been off since, like, the 28th of March now, so... I've had a few weeks, but
that's all right.
Busy office days. So every day is kind of busy, like
filling the gaps,
advancing and stuff. And I've been out on another tour for a few days, so it's. But I've been at home. I've been getting some sleep. I've been cooking food and
I suppose, like, because you're so used to being out and about at the time, when you have that time off, you kind of, you feel a bit like you want to be doing stuff and like you want to be going places.
Not really. I kind of feel like I just want to be lounging around and lying in bed and sleeping a bit more.
Just sort of like, yeah, just being able to chill out.
Not being in a hurry to go anywhere and do stuff, if you get what I mean.
Oh, right, yeah. Sort of know what you mean. I just find when I have time off work, I get really, really bored.
Yeah, I always feel like,
I feel like I have to wake up in the morning and do... I don't know, maybe it's gotten into this part of my life where I feel like I need to every day to have purpose.
I always find myself having lots of holidays left and then never wanting to take them because I haven't got anything
booked
for all those days.
That's what I do.
And I don't want to just take one and just sit on my arse.
Yeah, like I had to took off the entirety of March because I just didn't take any leave. Yeah. And it's like, well, now I've taken off all this time and I'm literally doing fuck all. And like then when I came back to work, I was like, oh, God, I've got to do 5 days this week. Like, oh, yeah. This is tedious.
I like having time off. And I think at the moment, because I've been so busy, like the time off doesn't become unwanted or boring.
Yeah.
I suppose, yeah, because if you've been out on tour for so long, like you don't actually see your house, whereas for us, obviously, we come back every evening and we can sort out little bits.
Eventually, like if I was off for a couple of months, then I'd be like, right, I'd get to a point where I'd be like, right, I'm ready to go back to work now.
Yeah, I've hoovered the kitchen 4 times. I've polished all the glasses. I need to find something to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of end up finding yourself wallowing a little bit.
And it's kind of like at the moment, even though I'm not away on shows, like I'm still so busy, so I don't actually find the time, that much time to relax or...
I suppose
or
when you
just shut off.
Yeah, I suppose because you're
not... When you take time off, you've got, like you said just now, you've got to do like all your emails, your admin, you've still got to do that back office stuff to be able to book the next bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose because being a production manager as well, it's not just like you do the tour and you're done. It's the advancing.
Yeah, it's constant advancing.
It's sorting the venues, it's getting the tech spec, it's making sure everyone's got everything in line, it's making sure you're not like overloaded on rigging.
It's a full-time job, really. Looking after the shows that I look after at the moment.
Especially your level of production management, it's arena size now, isn't it?
Yeah, so with George, it's...
Ezra. Yeah, we should explain that you are currently...
So one of my main projects at the minute is production manager for George Ezra, which is great, but it's big, so it's...
Yeah, it's a big production. So, based on what I've seen, it's pretty huge.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the biggest, but it's...
He's grown quickly though, hasn't he? It's gone from being like academies to arenas in quite a short amount of time.
Well, yeah, within a year, like a year ago this month, we did Brixton Academy.
Yeah, I remember I was going to go to that show, but I didn't buy tickets.
And then now we've just done sort of 2 nights at the O2. So it's,
the level of it has grown really quickly.
Hectic.
But that does mean that like we're constantly, like certainly I'm... And me and the tour manager are constantly looking at the next thing. So we came back at the UK knowing that we have a month to put the European run together and sort of, I think it's 18 festival shows as well. So
it must be quite hard like advancing a lot of European shows as well because you're so used to like the way everyone works UK wise. Is there a big difference between the sort of the way the venues are in Europe?
It's kind of different, but you follow the same process.
Yeah.
You know, but it is a little bit different just because obviously the territories are different and the way they do things out there are slightly different. But generally speaking, advancing the shows is kind of similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I follow a similar process.
Yeah, I suppose you have your workflow, don't you?
I imagine it, not that I've done it, but I imagine it would be quite... easy to get a grasp of doing it again and again.
And then you work out what was like the good crew and like the logistics and everything.
And I mean, it's just like the big part of the European thing is the routing and the drive times because the drives are a lot longer.
Big,
so because the distances are further. So, but that's kind of something that we do first, and then once we've done that, we get into the venue advances with the promoters, and that's the venue advances are basically the same. Everybody gets the same set of information, and then we get into backwards and forwards emails about how like, for example, some venues might not be able to hang 40 tons, they might be able to hang 30.
Yeah, so you have to then
change in the
change stuff, change your rig. But generally, it's the same. Like, advancing UK shows, European shows is kind of similar. But then, like, advancing festivals is like a whole new ball game.
Yeah,
obviously. Cool.
Is it headline slots George is doing?
Yeah, mainly headline slots. Yeah.
So about 70%. You sort of, but then at that point you can't be you got to sort of strip down your production in a way, don't you? For headliners, I suppose you couldn't. You won't be bringing in your own PA.
No. So you'd we strip down what we carry, but we're still going to take in like a substantial system to festivals because it's they're big headline festival shows, so they're like Isle of Wight Festival and Transmit Festival, and so they're not small shows. So we're still going to take about 4 trucks of production in.
Fair. Take a big battle in. For sort of George's tours, then what is your sort of level of production? What like logistically? What are you bringing in? How many trucks?
Well, the last arena show was 10 trucks.
10 trucks.
So you're looking at like a couple of trucks of staging for, and set.
Set is surprising how much that takes up. What is it? Is it LED wall? Is there a LED?
We've got a load of windows that are made of set and then LED wall behind it.
That's cool.
So they look like giant sort of Victorian sash windows.
Oh, that's nice. Well, I suppose the PA as well, that's probably at least a truck.
That's a truck.
It's a truck of just PA.
It's an acoustics PA. So it's a truck of that. And then it's a truck of... Then it's like... more space for audio control and backline. Half a truck.
Digicos.
You don't think about this from sort of like an audience perspective.
Yeah, when you go to shows, you don't think about the back end and like obviously like rigging as well.
The amount of
rigging you're bringing in as well, I suppose.
Well, you park at like these places are kitted up. Yeah. They've got enough parking for us, but not like they don't all have parking for 10 because we've not only got 10 trucks, we've got 5 tour buses as well to move the people around. So. Like, you want to park 15, 45-foot vehicles.
Yeah,
so
that is
some arenas
busy.
Can accommodate all of it, like, and you don't have to worry about it, but then some arenas can't. So then that's when you open up conversations about what you're going to do, and the venues will advise and the promoters will advise and stuff. And to be honest, once you've done the arena circuit a few times anyway, you kind of know
where to go.
You know where each thing's go, certainly in the UK, because there's only like 20 venues that you've got to remember. Like in Europe it's a bit different, and obviously you start forgetting because you go around so many venues, you start forgetting. But generally you kind of know what's what and what you can park where. But yeah, it's obviously one of the big things I do is manage all the parking and how we do it. And like, because we have days off and stuff as well. So it's like,
because
you not only got to park them on the show days when the venue's yours, but you've also got to park them on the days off. So,
Does that come under the remit of the tour manager as well? Or do you sort of split it 50-50 in regards to logistics like that? Or would that be more your?
On this tour, I tend to manage all the parking, but that's just because, like, between me and the stage manager, we know how the load and load out needs to work.
So you know what truck you need where and what truck's
next. And also we know that... So we work with the 2 lead drivers, and we know that the buses might need to move because of the load in and load out, you know. So, but the tour manager tends to look after the band logistics.
More the personnel.
What the band are going to do. But then we sort of manage the crew buses and make sure everything's parked out of the way of the trucks.
Yeah.
Because it's not only do you have to factor that in, like parking them, you have to think about hours and driving hours.
That's the work. Yeah. We have that at work as well, get the tacos and stuff like that. Yeah. You've got to be careful because as soon as someone goes over their hours, it's...
Well, you've got basically, you're restricted on when you can drive the trucks, and they have to have regular brakes and... basically when they're parked, once they're parked, they can't move. So for 12 hours, they can take their 12 hour break.
Engine running and things like that. It's weird.
Well, it's mainly to do with driver brakes. And off the top of my head, I don't know which way it works, but it's like every I think it's every 6 hours driving, you have to have a 45-minute break. Right. And then after 12 hours driving, you have to have an 11-hour break. It works in that kind of system. And then after so many days, you have to have a 24-hour break. And then after so many days, you have to have a 48-hour break.
Right.
So you have to factor all that in to your driver. So our tour truck drivers might have to take a 48-hour break. So then we have to get...
You go get agency
relief drivers.
Relief drivers.
The trucking company would send us relief drivers.
Yeah.
Sweet.
But then you lose the drivers... Because they can't be in the truck whilst they're having the 48-hour break. Right. So,
and it's sort of like when you know the drivers as well, and then you get another set of drivers in it, kind of.
Well, it's because the drivers know the show, and they know how all the trucks are loaded. So when you have to sort the drivers, it's not ideal, but it's obviously we have to operate legally, and that's not something that I have to manage. The lead drivers and the trucking companies manage it, all that.
Sure.
They just keep me informed. On what's going
on. It's always something to keep in your mind, isn't it?
Like, and stuff. But you have to... I have to understand that if I can't just park all the trucks in the morning and then the venue go, well, you can't park all the trucks, so you have to move them all.
Because
your drivers are on a break, so you...
We can't move them.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that everything's parked in the right place, because you can't just go out and be like, yeah, I'll just move them.
Yeah, you can't just hop in an Arctic and shunt it about. It's not
well, they
not that
yeah
easy.
They can if they're on driving time, but if you have to move something, they have to go on to driving time to move it because it's in the way. Then that's going to cause you a problem.
Yeah, it's going to have a knock-on effect later on. Yeah. Mm.
So yeah, as a customer, there's a lot of things that you probably don't think about when you go to the gig.
Like loading and out time as well. Like, no one realises how long it actually takes to put these shows together.
No, like, probably not.
In my, like, obviously, I'm a lot lower down event-wise, but, like, the amount of times we tell a client, and they're like, oh, why do you need these people to do that? And it's like, well, we get access to the venue at 4, and your event starts at 5. Like, we need a certain amount of just man hours just to get it in.
Yeah, man hours.
Just the power to get it in, because we can't... You can't have an event set in an hour if you've got one person doing it. But no one, I suppose, at the end of the day, people going to shows aren't really... So they don't... They're not
there to think about that.
Yeah,
they're there to have a good time.
Yeah,
as long as all that goes well, you wouldn't have to think about it. That's
of course. Yeah. And that's... yeah, like, I obviously go... when I go to shows, I obviously think about it because I'm in... I'm in the
That's
industry
what you do,
and I
yeah.
understand it.
But, I'm the same.
But
I'm
when like... I go out for dinner, I don't think about...
Yeah, you're not going, oh, how's the
someone's
chef working?
Someone's ordered
yeah.
the food and...
Yeah.
I suppose that's, do you know what I mean? That every walk of life has logistics involved.
We're there, like, yeah, when we go to shows, I'm always like, oh, that's that PA, oh, that's that light, oh, that's that. And then I suppose when you go to a bar, you're like, oh, wouldn't be pouring that like that.
Mm.
Yeah, you're always like, oh, someone's poured that pint wrong. I'm like, it's in a glass. Not on the floor, it's all right, isn't it?
It just looks like actual shit, and I'm just like wincing. Fucking putting fire in my mouth and throwing it across the fucking floor. Just give me my fucking drink.
Yeah, we were saying about this.
I don't want a pipette and jam.
Do you know them fucking cocktail bars, Jake, where like the bartenders spend about 40 minutes making one drink and there's a queue going out the fucking door? It's like, literally, put the drink in the fucking glass, give it to me, I'll drink it and fuck off, I'll give you your money.
I guess it depends what you're into, isn't it?
I don't need dry ice.
You're into if you don't want a nice cocktail, you're probably not in the right bar.
Yeah, but it's not that I don't want a nice cocktail. Yeah, I want a decent cocktail.
You can make a nice cocktail without the faff.
I just don't want it jizzed up. Not jazzed up.
You don't need a pipette of jam. You don't need dry ice.
I don't want it served.
You don't need a flame.
What's them, like, the
conical sort of...
Yeah, conicals. I don't
flask thing.
Conical drink.
I guess it's... That's what people want, isn't it?
Fucking gimmicks.
Which is why
they
do it.
Fucking gimmicks.
But yeah, I'm not. I mean, yeah, I like going to a nice cocktail bar, but I'm with you guys, really.
Yeah, I want just like a decent.
I don't
want to
wait 40 minutes for a drink.
There's like one near us, isn't it? That pet place or whatever, where it's like it's decent drinks, but they don't fuck ass about with it.
Yeah.
Just pour it in a glass.
Last time they pretty much poured a candle down my leg. So.
Yeah, but that's your own fault, wasn't it? Your knee was in the way of the candle, so.
Yeah. So it's a bar road. I was sat at a table. The person next to us had moved two tables together, so the candle that was on our table had basically been shunted off the table and just went and just poured down my leg and on my shoes and that sort of thing.
That's less than ideal.
Have you got
all the wax out yet?
Yeah, I had to iron my Vans to get the wax off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a clever way of doing it, though.
My mate said a good way of doing it is just to run, like, just run a bit of heat across it with, like, a lighter, because then it will, like, melt the wax again, just rub it away.
I can't say I've ever had the problem.
Well, now you know. When your neck's out and about and you get a bit of wax
on whatever garment.
I'll get Bingham to sort it out for
you. Yeah, give him a call. Give him a call and he'll
tea towel, iron over a tea towel. The wax goes into the tea towel and then you're fine.
No, but you're not fine because then you've got a tea towel covered in wax.
Yeah, but realistically, that's going to get in the wash, isn't it?
The Vans would be more important than the tea towel.
Yeah,
valid. I suppose there's cost differences. Right,
well, there we go. On.
There you go. Every day's a school day.
Yeah, we've all learned. We've all learned about tea towels and wax and stuff. Now,
let's do a segment. So we've got to say how we met. That's a classic, isn't it?
Is it? Oh, we're doing one. I thought we were doing a segment that, like, with one of my shitty titles.
Oh no, shitty title one first.
Shitty title one. Oh shit! Fuck! I'm not planning for this. Bingham, what do we do? YKEA music. That new one that you said about shitty tweets.
I haven't got a shit tweet yet lined up, right, so we'll do YKEA.
YKEA.
So we've got a section called YKEA, Jake. It's Y and then IKEA.
No, it's just Y then dash Kia.
I get it.
Yeah, so it's basically a section where we discuss our favourite furniture item.
Okay.
So I can't. What do we regularly say our favourite furniture item is?
I mean, obviously, based upon the title, it's something from IKEA. I like a Kallax shelving.
Kallax shelving.
Does it have to be from IKEA?
No.
Not necessarily, but this bench we've got here that we use as a coffee table, that's from IKEA. What, 40 quid, something like that?
35, I think.
35, ooh, even better.
And is that your favourite?
It's really, it's good, because when you've got people around.
When you say it like that, it sounds fucking sad, yeah.
Yeah, when you've got people around, miserable. Suddenly you've got three extra seats.
Okay, yeah.
Four, maybe, if you've got slim bums.
You can't get four people on that coffee table.
We've had three, haven't we? Me, you and Henry.
Yeah, three then. We'll go three.
I reckon
go
we could three. Have four. I reckon you could have four small people.
Three and a half a bum. One cheek. Or you can all straddle it. Five.
Yeah, like a horse.
Easy.
I'm not sure about that.
Well,
I wouldn't be sitting straddling it with five other people.
No, like that, no.
It probably claps.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is.
There'd be rubbing as well.
It is a nice bench / coffee table.
Thank you.
My favourite.
Yeah.
What's your sort of favourite?
I would say my mattress is probably my favourite.
Is a mattress a piece of furniture? Count, though, so. Or are we talking about the bed? Because a mattress. Because. I don't know. What are we constituting as a piece of furniture?
You would buy it from IKEA.
Yeah, go into it. Go into it. Describe.
Maybe the general.
This mattress.
Is it memory foam? Is it memory foam?
It's a memory foam, yeah. Oh. It's a Lisa mattress.
You're fucking up in the world with memory
foam. It's one of those ones that come up rolled up.
It does come rolled up. It's actually.
How does that work?
When it arrived in the box that it arrived in, I was like, that isn't a mattress.
Yeah, like, what?
Not. Is it really thin?
No, like now it's like foot deep, but they suck all the air.
Oh,
out of
vacuum
it.
Sealed, vacuum.
So they vacuum suck all the air out of it, and then it's literally the smallest thing ever. Like it's like the size of a sleeping bag.
Yeah,
packed away, and I was like, wow.
So when you like move house, you can suck all the air out.
I can't do that.
Do you have to have a? Surely you could just do it with like a Dyson. Other Hoovers are available.
I'm not going to try that, but maybe you could.
Easy, cool, good section.
So your favourite
was that a good section?
Yeah.
I've never had a mattress. It's quite an interesting one. I've never had someone say mattress before.
Oh, and I'm glad I was a bit different.
Yeah. We usually get
outside of the box.
It's usually like
forward
Billy bookcases or Kallax, you know.
To getting home to my mattress, I stay in a lot of different beds.
Yeah, shitty beds.
I stay in a lot of hotels, tour buses, sometimes porter cabins. So having a nice mattress is something that I look for.
Right.
It means that I can look forward to going home to it when I know I'm going home. Dave. I'm excited about sleeping in my own bed.
I've got a new section here now. It's Premier Inn versus Travel Lodge.
It's always, for me, it's always going to be the Premier Inn.
Yeah.
Purple, the Purple Kingdom, Purple Castle.
That, that slight level up, I think, isn't
for
it?
For various reasons.
What would you say is your favourite Premier Inn then? Here we go.
Oh, my favourite Premier Inn. I don't...
North Circular.
To be honest...
North Circular.
It's not something that...
Bethnal Green.
There can be because it...
They're all the same.
I've said,
no, everyone's like, oh, Premier Inn. It's like, yeah, you walk... Once you're in the reception and you're up that lift, every single corridor is the same. But it's just one long corridor with lots and lots of turnings.
Yeah, I don't have a favourite Premier Inn,
because every single one's the same at the end of the day. It's just a bed in a room.
But overall...
Premier Inn over Travelodge.
Over Travelodge.
Right, we'll tweet them.
Travelodges are not that bad.
They're definitely better than, like, what's really shit.
At least they're a safe bet, so you know
what you're getting. Yeah, you're not going to get someone where you're like, oh, it's only 30 quid a night, but I could be sleeping on a rat.
Yeah, or, you know, you could stay in the bed and breakfast, which you've never stayed at before, and... it might not work out for you. So I would always suggest that the Travelodge is the safer option. However, I have stayed in some Travelodges over the last couple of years in the summer that don't have air conditioning, and they are not
pretty. Do they do the good night sleep?
So hot.
Do Travelodge do good night sleep guarantee?
I don't know.
Because I know Premier Inn, if you're having a bad night's sleep, you get your money back.
But that's obviously a big reason
that seems a lot of
as to why I like Premier Inns, is because they all have air conditioning.
Yeah, so. The air conditioning's fucking solid. Keeps you nice and cool.
Yeah. Does kill a plant, though, so bear that in mind. Next time you're sleeping
I'll bear that in mind.
Ooh.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't work in the most environmentally friendly industry in the world.
Very true.
I'm all right.
As long as you're doing a bit of...
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as you recycle better than this,
but I would... leave the aircon on if it meant that I was going
to
be
live events in general are probably it's quite an environmentally damaging industry.
Yeah,
the show must go on.
We drive 10 trucks around the country all year, so
that's
just the emissions. That's before you get into product and start thinking about plastic cups at the end of an arena show. Like, remember cleaning the SU up,
and the amount of plastic cups,
between 10 and 20 bin bags a night, just full of plastic cups,
just plastic
and straws.
And then
just
like times that by 20. It's not the most environmentally friendly industry in the world,
but you can't exactly be giving out glass or expecting people to bring their own cups at the end of the day, innit?
No, I guess paper cups would probably be better, but it's not something that you... I mean, you do see it sometimes.
A lot of festivals
everywhere.
Do paper cups now, don't they?
I think the festivals are on board with it. The festivals are a lot better, yeah.
Yeah, old paper cups. But still, they're not going to be like... They're not going to be running the main...
Yeah, tin of beans.
Not going to be running main stage Glastonbury off a fucking like biodiesel generator.
I'm afraid they're not. They probably want you to think that they are, but
probably just
they're not.
A whole lot of shit they create. And
they're just powering the generators off the Portaloos. Burning people's shit.
Not off the cow's shit that they have in the fallow year. The fallow year is to collect all the shit. This isn't a thing. It would be good.
So
you did say that you wanted to change.
Yeah.
Hook up the cow's shed, so when they're all farting all the methane, link up to the generators, main stage pyramid, done.
Change from working with shit to working with shit.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to come away from diesel generators until I know that there's a...
So you know that they're actually reliable, because...
Yeah.
If the power goes down the festival, it's more than just the fact that everything's cutting out. It's
maybe another 10 trucks to bring windmills with you each time you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, then at the end of the day, that's then just going to make it not even carbon neutral.
Three or four of those A-frame trucks that just have solar panels on the side.
That's not going to chuck out what you need, I'm afraid.
Or maybe change the roof.
Like nowhere near, unfortunately.
Changing the roof of the truck to have solar panels on the roof.
I suppose they're the trucks that peel back. No?
Well, the generator trucks.
Yeah, Jenny trucks.
They're just flatbed trucks.
Flatbeds. Well, I'm thinking like maybe like on the roof of an Arctic, having like solar panels as the roof of the Arctic.
Or in front
of
it.
Yeah, but it's not going
to
get your truck
from... But then also, that would have to then store into a battery, wouldn't it? Yeah.
London to...
Yeah.
It's all
Glasgow
hard. It's all hypothetical,
night,
isn't it?
It's
all hard. Oh yeah, shit! It's at night as well. It's driving. We're fucked. Yeah. So
I'm sure there is.
There's probably some people with a lot more intelligence than us
that are working on it,
thinking about solar powered.
Because the electric car thing's getting there. So,
but then
I'm
at the end of the day, an electric car, it's still there's still some form of fossil fuel that's been burnt to power its batteries. So.
Yeah, I guess maybe. When they really crack solar, that'll be when it all comes into its own, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch this space, I guess. Well, not this space, but that space.
A space.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Watch A space. Mm. Yeah. Right.
Cool. Shall we delve into...
Lego versus Mega Bloks?
Yeah, so we've got this mini section of... what would you prefer? Do you prefer Lego or Mega Bloks?
Lego.
Thank fuck for that.
100% Lego.
Yeah. This is the fifth episode and we haven't had someone go Mega Bloks because we wouldn't invite a fucking nonce on the podcast.
We turn it off. I think we turn it off.
You just give up now.
And if they did mention Mega Bloks, we'd cut it out. And I'd just go over top, Lego.
Yeah.
It's got to be Lego. I was a big Lego fan when I was younger.
Same.
I have a lot of Lego. I still have a lot of Lego. I'm not going to get rid of it anytime soon.
One of your favourite items of furniture? Lego?
Lego, yeah. I used to... we have like a... My dad bought me a big Lego train set.
Oh, that must have been sick.
When I was a lot younger and I had like a Lego village. And I built like a whole...
Decent.
...town and it had like a football pitch and a pop concert...
Sweet.
And a load of buildings.
Little did you know that in the future you would also be putting on pop concerts.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a precursor. Exactly.
Although I kind of was involved at that point because my dad worked in the industry and he used to take me to work with him. So this was when I was really young. So hence why I thought about building a pop concert out of Lego.
Always had exposure to live events then from
always,
that.
Yeah. Always since I was in a pushchair, to be honest. So.
Pretty cool.
Solid.
Solid.
Solid. Solid upbringing.
Solid. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been very lucky to have been involved with live events since. I'm only 25 and I'm working in quite a senior role for one of the biggest acts in the UK.
Yeah,
so
very, very good role.
Which I'm really grateful about, it's cool.
Because your dad's Pierce Hire, right?
Yeah, he owns a company called Pierce Hire,
which is cool. Do a lot of big events, don't
they? Yeah, we do
Didn't they win an award or something like that recently?
They did win the...
Wasn't it like Power
Supplier
of
the Year? Event production awards.
Because you guys, you don't just do power, do you? You also do lighting.
Lighting, audio, rigging, drapes, staging.
I didn't know you did audio.
So kind of a full production...
Yeah, I remember being at All Points East and just looking up at one of the delay towers and just seeing like a floodlight with Pierce Hire written on it. I was like, fucking hell.
You would see that. That is one of our big projects.
Yeah, because you did it before it was All Points East, back when it was Lovebox.
Well, we worked in Victoria Park when it was Field Day and we did Lovebox there as well. So two festivals in a calendar year in Victoria Park, which are now moved.
To All Points East.
To Gunnersbury.
To Gunnersbury.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know what's happened to Field Day, because we don't do Field Day.
Yeah, Field Day's at Gasworks now.
It's gone up to Enfield.
Yeah, it's got a building, I think.
Yeah, it's Broadwick Live as well, isn't it?
Yeah, Field Day's a Broadwick Live show.
And I think
they
bought the venue as well.
Yeah, I don't know much about it.
Are you guys, any involvement?
We don't, no, so since Field Day moved from Victoria Park, we haven't been involved. So the contractor that we worked on All Points East... Sorry, on Field Day 4, continued to work with All Points East. We kind of stayed working for
the
same
site,
people.
Yeah.
So the contract was with the site and the people that were running it. So we stayed, but the events changed. And then Lovebox moved to Gunnersbury and we still look after Lovebox as well. So
that's cool.
Solid.
Good shit.
Busy.
That's how I end up being quite busy.
All over the place.
I suppose organising power for events as well is it's another thing, as we said, it's not really, no one really notices it, but it's like, if this didn't happen,
you notice it when it's not there.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because it's something you're like, you're the first ones on site and the last ones on site.
Yeah, I mean, we're not the very first, but we come in early and we go out late. Yeah.
Yeah,
and you think, when you think about kind of essentials, and this is kind of how I explain to people that don't know what I do, to how busy it can be on a day at a festival when you're loading in, particularly when you're like 2 or 3 days away from the show.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Everything's coming in.
Essentials. There's 3 essentials that people need these days to be able to function and to do jobs.
Can we guess?
You can guess, yeah.
Guess one.
I'm guessing power and connectivity.
Power and connectivity, I would say that are 2. So
I was thinking internet.
Yeah, so that's 2 of the 3.
Water.
And water.
Bam, bam, bam.
Pretty quick guesses, to be honest.
3 stars.
Solid.
So we're obviously quite in demand, and those 3 strands of the festival, there becomes moments where you literally are the most wanted person on the site, because everyone wants their power and everybody wants it now.
Yeah, and they want it. They want it now. They want it plugged in straight away, but it's just going to fucking spike.
Well, you just can't be ready 3 days away from the festival, you know? Like, because if clients wanted it to be finished 3 days before,
you'd be
then
in
I'd be coming
days
in 3 days earlier with a load more people.
But then that's so much more money, isn't it?
So people just have to wait, ultimately. But it's all about prioritising certain people and certain aspects, and it's having the ability to know who to prioritise, why to prioritise them, etc.
So how many people would you say you'd have on average site when you're doing a build and throughout the site?
I mean, it depends how big the event is, but on a festival of the size of
Victoria Park stuff,
probably have 10 guys for builds.
Yeah.
So we'd stagger it. It'd be like 4 for a few days until it really got going. Because obviously we wait on a lot of infrastructure to be built, like staging, marquees,
fencing. Yeah, I suppose, because you don't just want to put your generators in a spot where it's not...
Well, we can't do anything until the infrastructure's there to run cables, hang lights off, run festoon on the scaff, you know. So we start off with a small team and then incrementally build it up, so you'll end up, like, by the time you're into the main build week on a job like that, there'll be about 10 of us, and then that would normally all put pieces at like 11 day show,
because you've got like a 3 day weekend, then you've got a week long show, then you've got another 3 day weekend.
Yeah, so we drop it right down because we don't need 10 guys there.
Would you have like 2 or 3 to manage?
Drop it down to 4.
4 people, I suppose. It gives you someone.
Well, yeah,
someone
stuff's
on the
always
stage.
Changing. You need someone on each stage. For the days
roaming around,
and then a couple of people floating.
About less than I imagined, actually. But I suppose
once it is done,
and you've got it to the point where everyone's cool, then
kind of like babysitting in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, you babysitting, sure, and then you need to bring it back in again to take it.
Yeah,
out,
and then you bring them all
thing.
Back to take it down. And the thing is, we're in an industry where finance and money is a massive factor. Well, finance and money is a massive factor anyway, but as in, everything runs quite tightly in events. So
yeah, you'd think, like, you'd look at like the ticket costs of, say, like Reading, and they're selling 200 and however much for a weekend.
Well, and the big organisations want to make as much money as they can out of everything, so everything's sort of squeezed.
But then there's
as much as it can
so
be.
Many
so
costs as well, aren't there?
Yeah, like, exactly. But we just have to work with clients to be able to achieve the budgets that they
and
want
make
to achieve.
It and worthwhile for yourselves as well.
Yeah, of course. Which we do that. And if we don't make any money, then we're obviously not going to look at the job. Or we're only going to cut back and offer people so much discount.
Yeah,
because there is a point where we need to cover our costs and
turn
over
anyway.
If we're not doing that, then why? Why are we doing it?
At the end of the day, if you're doing something and you're not making any money out of it, then you're not operating a business, are you?
Yeah, costs are going up, like in some areas, and then costs are going down in other areas. So,
yeah,
you know, there's more.
I suppose the way everything all makes money is changing as well. So for like gigs and stuff, it's not necessarily tickets. and music. It's more merch and bars, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of everything, really. The thing is with live touring now and concerts is that it's really the only way that an artist makes any money.
Definitely. Live music is how artists make money.
Because of streaming and like Spotify and like the younger generation of people that don't really buy records anymore. I don't know all the facts on this. It isn't what I do, but
yeah,
I think I know. I think I know enough to know that that people don't buy records and our acts don't make masses of money out of record sales anymore. I think collectively, when you look at merch, live income,
sponsorship,
sync, all of that, then obviously the music industry is still booming and artists do make money.
There's still money in it and make livings out of it. So much, yeah.
But it means that what we do has a bigger impact on the show. So back in the day, I obviously wasn't involved at this level, but I've spoken to people and the artists would spend loads of money on production and it wouldn't be in question, you know.
Live production?
Yeah, and the logistics, you know, so like private jets everywhere and trucks and unnecessary expenditure never used to be questioned when you talk to people that used to work. Like everyone would fly business
and
those kind of things. But nowadays, artists and managers need to make money out of touring.
Yeah, because what's the point
of
doing
it? So flying everyone business is not an option anymore. Because it's so expensive, so much more money
on top of just
squeezing it down.
At the end of the day, you still get to the location. It doesn't matter what part of the plane you fly in, you just get a little bit more legroom and someone brings you a glass of champagne.
It kind of does matter if you're doing like a 14, 15-hour long flight and then you've got to go and do a load in the next morning. But every act's different when it comes to the flying thing, and I don't fly business with any of my acts, but sometimes we're lucky and we get upgraded, sometimes we don't, you know?
But I
don't mind. Like, I'm willing to fly in whatever class because that's what's on offer to me. So
yeah, and like
if they say here's your flight, I'll get on it, no problem at all.
It's not cost you any money for the flight at the end of the day, has it?
To do whatever, but there are a lot of people out there that work in this industry that will only fly business.
Yeah, and it's a bit like,
well,
do you find they're the older people that have been around longer?
I guess it's how long you've been doing it for, isn't it? Yep. You know, and how good you are at your job, and if that's your terms, and they want you to work for them. So if I was a world-renowned production manager or lighting designer or whatever, and I was getting like 50 gigs offered to me a year, and I said, these are my terms and conditions, if you want me to work for you, then that is how it is.
Most people will accept it, won't they?
If they wanted me to come on board, then they would. Some people would, I guess, some people wouldn't, but that's kind of how it works. And I don't need to do that at the minute, and that isn't going to help me get to where I want to be, if you know what I mean. Because
it's
going to make me come across as a 25-year-old probably a little bit arrogant.
I suppose in a way you're still quite like at the early stages of your career.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though you've been doing it for quite a long time, you're still, in the grand scheme of things, 25 years old, you're still early in any career.
Yeah, exactly.
And one day you will be telling people that you're only going to be flying business class.
Yeah, maybe one day. I tend to save business class flying for holidays as well, which is
like a little treat.
Yeah, a little treat.
Yeah, waiting for someone to bring over a cocktail made with fire and pipettes.
I don't know if there's any fire and pipettes in the sky, but
she's a flambeau thing, weren't they? Like fake flames.
One of those little curtain things
little,
and
like,
just go.
Wavy red light and a bit of paper.
Fuck's sake.
So you obviously work in live events. Are you still always on the seek out for new artists to listen to? Do you go to a lot of concerts?
I don't go to concerts
Does it make you feel like hobby, you're? Does it make you feel like you're at work when you go?
I wouldn't say it makes me feel like I'm at work if I go to a gig, like outside of work, because I'm obviously not at work because it's different, you know.
Yeah.
I'm either with my girlfriend or friends, or I'm drinking, or I've been out for dinner.
Quick so 2-pint cup on your
very head. Different circumstances, but it's hard not to absorb it in and look at it and stuff like that. But it, because that's how I'm wired up, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not really on the lookout for anything new, and I haven't been to many gigs this year as a punter. I've been to a couple.
Yeah. What is your general music vibe that you go
what's
for?
What's your genre of choice?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Although we did say last time that genres don't exist anymore, but
yeah, that's now the point.
Yeah.
It's a bit because I can't really pinpoint like a genre that I listen to, because I listen to loads of different things. Really, I'm kind of across the board. So. Obviously, Foles have got a new album out at the moment,
yeah.
And I'm a big fan of those guys.
Good album.
Yeah. To work with them.
Which is great. I'd love to work with them maybe one day. Mm. But also, yeah, maybe not, you know, because I was talking to someone about this the other day, and Foles probably are one of my favourite bands, if not my favourite band, so maybe I don't want to work with them.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm quite happy to.
Maybe it would
that.
Ruin the aesthetics.
Like, never meet your thing. Idol, sort of
yeah.
thing.
As it
like,
is.
Like, yeah.
I also, there's a girl called Lily Moore, a singer.
I've heard. Yeah.
And she's amazing. So I've been listening to quite a bit of that. She's got new music coming out every now and again. So I listen to The Streets quite a lot.
Lockdown your area.
Driving.
Streets are great. Love them.
But yeah, so I'm kind of open when it comes to music. I listen to
good to hear.
Like quite a lot of different bands, mainly band stuff.
Yeah.
And like I like a few female singers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with music. I don't get masses of time to listen.
I suppose, yeah, because when you're, if you're, especially if you're working a lot, your time off is.
Well, yeah, when I'm away, when we're obviously on site, we don't listen to music, and then I don't really wake up in the morning and put music on. I
suppose listen if you're going to spend an evening listening to music, you kind of want a bit of like chill.
Yeah, silence. But I don't really do that, you know. Like if I'm cooking in the kitchen, I might put some music on, or if
but
I'm
it's
in
like
the
passive,
right.
Passively listening, isn't it? When
yeah,
you're just doing
if
that.
I'm in the right headspace. Whilst working at my desk in either a production office or a site office or just my desk at home, I might put some music on, but generally I don't. It's kind of just, I find it quite distracting.
Yeah, I get that.
But I listen to a fair bit in the car when I'm driving, but I also listen to podcasts as well because it's quite. Like when you're driving for 3 or 4 hours.
It's more involving, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like makes your brain involving. Think of it.
Yeah, and it makes. Driving's a difficult one for me at the moment because I'm so busy and I get so many emails and stuff. And I can't work when I'm driving. Like, I can obviously make the odd phone call, but it's still not great. And I try to avoid making important phone calls whilst I'm driving because if.
Some cunt cuts you up.
No, just like if the signal's bad or you get cut off, then or if they can't hear you very well, then it's
a bit unprofessional.
I've been on the other end of it and it's quite annoying. So
yeah.
But I think I've forgotten what my point was, to be honest.
Yeah, same to be fair.
I know. So I try and shut myself away from work whilst I'm driving. So because all I can do, if I don't shut myself away from it, all I can do is think about all the work that I'm not doing because I'm driving.
Or you have like a great idea for something you need to do and then you like need to write it down. Or...
And you can't.
Yeah.
So it's nice to try and use the driving time to shut off for a bit. So that's why listening to podcasts and stuff is good. whilst driving, basically.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I was told a handy tip the other day that if you've got too many podcasts in your library to listen to them on 1.5 speed, because it's not so quick that you can't understand it, but it's quick enough to get through it quicker.
I've never wondered why. I've always wondered why podcast apps have different speeds to listen them to. Because the last thing I could want to do is listen to a podcast at double speed. It pissed me off. I feel like Alvin and the Chipmunks podcast.
Yeah. I guess it depends what your reason for listening to it is.
Yeah, I can barely concentrate. It's like if I'm reading something, I'll have to read it a few times before it actually gets into my head.
I just feel like this is
so if I'm listening to a podcast, I have to listen to it on the actual speed it should be.
Yeah.
Otherwise it won't.
But I
go
feel
in.
Like this is just what happens in this sort of like modern culture. It's to do with the way that everyone multitasks. We did this event at work and this bloke came up and he was speaking about multitasking. He was basically saying like multitasking isn't good, it's not good for anyone. And he's now gotten to the point where like his phone is always on do not disturb. Everything set to a point, so he will use his phone when he needs to use his phone. He won't use his phone when it goes off. So people that call him know that. So he's basically he's got some whole theory on it, and it's quite interesting. Basically saying like, we should be doing one thing at a time. We shouldn't be doing multiple things at the same time. But I feel like it's a near. I mean, like he's managed to get it down to a T because he's like some professor, and all he does is write books. So he probably doesn't have four people on the phone expecting him to get stuff done straight away. But like, when you need to be on your phone at the time, it's quite difficult not to multitask, I suppose.
Yeah, it's...
But I'm trying my hardest to. I'm trying, like, my hardest to, if I'm watching a TV programme, watch the TV programme, don't...
Yeah, don't scroll Facebook in one hand. And watch
stuff going on Twitter.
I mean, I don't think that we're not really made to multitask, so...
No, we're not.
I mean, we can do it, or some people would say that men can't do it, but
I can
multitask a bit.
I'm getting better at multitasking, but I don't think it's a good thing to be getting better at. I want to try and like commit myself to doing one thing at a time because I get so easily distracted.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, like, because sometimes you just end up with too many things going on, and it kind of
and then you just sort
brain.
Of your brain hurt. You just
you're
explode
emailing
a bit, don't
someone,
you?
Your phone's going, the radio's going, someone's calling you on it, and it's like.
What the fuck?
Like sometimes
it's worse when you're like you're doing something. You're like you've got like some cables in your hand or something, and you need to do it. And then it's like, right, if I don't do this now, I'm not going to get it done in half an hour. And
yeah,
I'm like, oh, can come up with this. Fuck off, no. Anyway, back to music. Yeah. Then I suppose Bingham, music. What you've been listening to?
I'm trying to think what I've done in the past month. So I went to see Enemy's got a new sort of like gig. Project they're doing, which is like Enemy Girls to the Front. So it's all like.
Is that when you saw Black Honey?
Female singers and female front of singers, that sort of thing, in different places. I went with Ollie Flux to see Black Honey. Really good.
Where was that?
Somewhere in Dalston.
Wasn't it like a Shacklewell Arms or something you said?
Shacklewell Arms.
Yeah, I know that place.
Quirky. But yeah, that was good, really good. So I've been listening to a lot of Black Honey. So their album came out quite a while ago, but good shit. What else have I been listening to?
I've been listening to The Hunter.
Oh.
A bit as well recently. They
I like The Hunter.
They kind of came out of nowhere for me.
Yeah, they're kind of
I kind of feel like the songs very much merge into one.
Yeah, I think their newer stuff's a bit different. Their first album, or the first album that I listened to, I don't know if it was their first album, but that was all kind of very similar.
Yeah,
but the newer stuff's quite different. But they're quite a good band. I saw them last year at All Points East actually, and I wanted to go and see them again this year, but I haven't made it.
I saw Blossoms instead of The Hunter at All Points East.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All of the people I was with, like, were seeing The Hunter. I was like, I'm going to see Blossoms.
Yeah, so Blossoms.
Sort of went over there
Blossoms
with
are a good band as well, to
They've
be fair.
They've just had a new song out today.
I had a listen earlier. Pretty good.
They're cool. We've done a couple of shows with those guys, actually, where they've been on the same bill, so...
They're pretty good.
They've got
a podcast out. Not to...
Oh, yeah, they really
not
want
to direct
to
people from our podcast, but their podcast is just... It's just fucking hilarious. I was walking down the street yesterday
just pissing myself. Two people we've spoken about have got podcasts.
Yeah, this podcast probably isn't very exciting. Me talking about generators and
Well, that's
this is appealing to the live event audience.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, you're lucky because I was going to completely divert when you were talking about George Ezra's tour. I was going to be asking about what sort of PA, what's your connection type, what you're running, what digital multi-cores you're using, your lighting fixtures.
So we managed to dodge all of that.
We can pick it up if we want.
I mean, I'm easy.
How long have we got? If you guys want to know, then
I can tell you. But
right, let's just
we're probably
get, let's,
not going to talk about it for hours and hours. Cause
let's get a few.
I talk about it enough, but I'll give you a few headlines.
Let's get a few tech heads mildly aroused.
I don't know about that.
How are you running to stage? Are we digital? Are we talking digital? Digico. We've got the
Digico.
192 kilohertz. 192 boxes.
I don't know the answer to that.
Are you using a Grandam A2?
We are using several Grandam A2s.
Oh, jeez.
To run video and lighting.
Yeah, what's your video processors that you're doing?
Hippo.
Whoa, which ones?
Boreal Plus.
Whoa, we got a cast. We got a Hippotizer cast. I use a cast.
Nice.
It's all right.
I've used those little guys before.
They're little baby boys, but they're good. Yeah. Speakers, L-acoustics.
Lovely.
Nice.
They're the best. They are the best.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they are called LA, the best sound for a reason, aren't they? So you're saying you'd rather use L-acoustics over digital?
I'm not a sound engineer, and I D&B? Don't. Hence me not knowing the answer to your question about
your stage box and your kilohertz.
I'm definitely not an audio bod, and I know enough about it to do what I do.
So you say digital?
But I know that the gig sounds great, and it always sounds great.
L-acoustics over D&B, then, or would you?
I pierce higher in L-acoustics, and I've always been around L-acoustics.
I like
a lot of my good friends that work in the industry tell me that L-acoustics are the speakers to use. Mm. So I am a little bit biased.
I think they're not, and they're brown as opposed to.
I mean, speakers are speakers, to be honest.
Yeah, L-acoustic boxes are brown, not black.
They are brown.
Yeah, I'm into that.
It's hard to see because they're flown in the air, but they're brown as opposed to black, so...
Fair. Blend into the ceiling.
No one's really looking at the speakers.
No one,
so,
yeah.
Apart from me, maybe. And I will.
I do love a good line array, to be fair.
At times.
Yeah, but it's, sometimes a line array is nice, but then when, like, people who have designed a set haven't sort of put into consideration speakers, so Coachella with their massive curved LED wall, and it's like, oh, this is really cool. Huge acoustics hang.
Ruins the curved entire LED wall.
I guess the speakers are quite important, though. That's the problem. So.
And they haven't made decent LED wall where sound.
Apparently, Coachella just set on fire. So.
Well, they can, and they. There is LED.
There is the mesh.
No audio person is going to want their PA firing for a screen. I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, if someone said, "Oh, put your speaker there," I'd be like, "No, not happening. Not possible."
I mean, I come in.
You'd lose all your fidelity.
I've come across people that won't have like drapes and like acoustic fabric in front of speakers because it damages the frequencies, so an LED wall is definitely not. I mean, it's not my world, so I get it.
When people come to me and say,
"Can we move that drape?" Yeah, absolutely, we can move that drape. If you tell me that it's a problem, I'll fix.
You have to balance.
That's what I'm there to do. Mm. So,
yeah, at the end of the day, it's managing expectations, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's managing expectations, but it's managing not necessarily expectations. It's managing actual situations. So,
yeah.
If the venue come up and put a load of stuff in front of the speakers, then the venue techs come to me and say, so my touring PA techs say, this isn't going to work, this is causing us a problem, then I'll work with them to fix the problem, you know. I'm not just going to be like, it's a fucking drape, I'm not moving it.
Yeah.
I will move it.
Mm.
Fair.
I suppose it's keeping all the parties happy again.
Yeah, it's a big part of what I try to do is try and make sure that everyone's happy and everyone gets the same kind of level of attention from me, because I'm massively audio, so massively lighting and power-minded, so it's very easy for me to be biased to those departments because that's what I know, but I try to have a level playing field.
So before you were production manager, you started as power.
I've always done power, and that power's kind of in my blood. as it were, because of what my dad does. So I've always been involved in that and I've always done that. And that's kind of 50% of what I do and what my knowledge is power and generators and site power. And then the other 50% is lighting and production management. And that's kind of how the balance is. So like I'd done quite a bit of lighting design and toured with acts as lighting operators and lighting designers and production designers and stuff. So.
Sweet.
Cool. Should we move back onto music again then? Into any more bands you listen to, Ben?
Yes, I went to see Black Honey. That was really good. I've been listening to a lot of the band Pigs.
How many pigs?
Seven, I think. Seven pigs. Yeah.
But they're not called Seven Pigs.
No, it's just Pigs.
Is that like, is it spaced or comma, hence the way you say the pigs, or does it matter the way pigs?
No commas.
So it's just pigs, but you're putting in pauses for sort of dramatic effect.
No, he's putting in pauses because he's counting how many times he's saying pigs.
Oh, right, and he's got to breathe a bit as well, I suppose.
So I'm not going to try and say it because I'll get it wrong.
Pigs. Sweet.
Still not going
to
say
it. Yeah. So if I listen to that band, Tame Impala's had quite a few good tracks out.
Yeah, they're quite big nowadays.
Solid, yeah. The Amazons have got a lot of good stuff coming out. They've had two tracks.
I haven't actually listened to their new stuff.
Two new tracks out recently, which is good shit. Good shit. Yeah. I haven't been to as many gigs this time round as I had last time.
I also haven't. But I've got more coming. I've got more lined up now.
I don't think I've got any lined up, you know.
Indoor Pets next week.
Indoor Pets next week, that's it. Yeah.
That's about it.
I have been listening to Indoor Pets.
Yeah.
Good shit. I've also been listening to Casey Musgraves. Who's a...
It's a wild card. Slightly different.
Country act, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've been listening to country as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you listened to country in the shower.
What, today?
Mm.
That wasn't country, that was Pinegrave.
Close.
But they're like, yeah, they're like indie emo with a bit of country. They've got like country undertones there. I mean, one of their tracks, they do whack out a banjo. So like, yeah, it's got that country vibe to it, yeah. So obviously I saw Pinegrove last week, literally on the day. My mate was like, do you want to go see Pinegrove? I was like, yeah, why not? Just went along, evening after work, pretty decent.
Guest list.
Then, yeah, I got obviously seeing Indoor Pets next week. Gus Dapperton's album's coming out next week. Fifth podcast, fifth mention.
Yeah.
So have you got another podcast tomorrow?
Yeah.
What are you going to talk about?
I don't know. We're sort of fucking drained this dry, mate.
Yeah.
Tonight we're going to watch a shit ton of TV, listen to loads of fucking music.
I think you're going to have to.
We're aiming to split it up. So.
Yeah, I just we've selected,
take some of these facts away.
We've selected pieces that
you're forgetting, Jake. Yeah. I do the edit here, so if I need to, I just cut that shit out.
But in some of them, we've mentioned. I mean, Will's mentioned Gus Dapperton.
I will mention Gus Dapperton tomorrow podcast, as well. So. It doesn't matter. I'll mention him tomorrow.
Yeah,
there's an artist on my phone that I'm going to mention tomorrow. Everyone's
waiting.
Oh yeah, I've wetted the. That's an amuse-bouche. An amuse-bouche. Amuse-bouche? The thing
amuse-bouche.
That's that thing you have before a meal, isn't it? To like make your palate wet.
That's an appetizer.
Amuse-bouche?
No, it's I think you're right.
I'm saying it wrong because I can't. I can just about speak.
I wish Siri actually could Google. I guess that would be good.
I think you are saying it right.
Amuse-bouche.
Can you do that thing where your phone says it?
What?
They are different from appetizers in that they are not ordered from a menu by patrons, but are served for free and according to the chef's selection alone.
See?
Okay.
Amuse-bouche.
Amuse-bouche. I'm just going to give it a charge here, Willie. Amuse-bouche. Cool.
So, yeah, we've waited the appetite for tomorrow. So a bit of television.
TV. Yeah, film and TV section.
It's another section we do. We just talk about, like, film and TV.
So I won't be masses of use to you in this section. Because
that's fine, because I'm not massive.
I suppose you have less time to watch shows
really
than you do music.
Anything.
So.
You have an excuse to not watch TV.
But I watch a bit, so recently I rewatched the whole of Skins.
Solid.
Skins was great.
I rewatched that a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And I think, what, is it 7 or 8 series?
Yeah, there's a lot of it. But it changes, and I rewatched all different, of it. Different casts every 2 series. So,
and I rewatched it in about 2 or 3 months, so kind of binge-watched it.
Who's your favourite bunch, then?
Solid.
The first lot are the best.
Yeah, I like the first lot. Yeah, I'll give you that.
And then
the first lot, and then Effie's grown up a lot.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Hmm.
I wasn't too keen on the last two.
I never actually watched it when it was out.
It all kind of made sense, and I watched bits that I didn't watch because when I first watched it, I watched it when it was on the telly, so I missed quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise that I had missed quite a lot. I rewatched it.
Do you remember when they've done them like last three, the little 3 extra episodes as well, like Fire and that?
Yeah, but because I watched it all quite closely together, it all kind of made a bit more sense because it all relates back.
Yeah.
So yeah, I watched that. That was a thing that I got quite into. And then I'm also into a BBC series called Line of Duty.
I was looking at getting into that.
Which is mental. Yeah. Like, if you've never watched it, any of it, then you need to start from... I would recommend that. If you're into sort of crime drama...
Yeah.
I feel like someone tweeted about Line of Duty.
Then you need to watch it, basically.
Called it Hollyoaks, but with cops.
It's about a counter-terrorism... No, sorry, not counter-terrorism. Counter-corruption unit in the police. So it's called AC-12, which is anti-corruption, basically. And it's about... And basically, each series is based on a load of crime that's going on.
Cool.
And it's about how... But these crimes can only happen because there's either leaks from the police or it's police officers killing police officers. Basically, the storyline goes that they all link to an organised crime
gang,
which is... got to be somebody high up in the police. So, but they all link together. So I think this is like series 4 now, or series 5, I can't remember, but like each, it always links back to this person that they don't know who it is. So, but it's unbelievable how it can have your, in an hour, 1 hour episode, have your brain going, thinking you really know what's going on, and then all of a sudden you don't, and there could be like 5 different, by the end of the episode there's like 5 different ways you could think about what is going on, and you just need to see the next one. And it's like, I've never really got into a series like that, that as soon as it ends I'm like, I need to watch
the next one.
And if we, and me and my girlfriend are watching that together, and if we go away, we'll try and save like 2 or 3. And then we'll be like, yeah, we'll watch one tonight, we'll watch the next one tomorrow, and we'll watch the next one after that. We can't do that.
Yeah.
We'll end up watching them all.
Smash it out.
See, Craig Reynolds from Stray From The Path tweeted saying, asking if it gets any better. He's on episode 5 of series 1, said it's like Hollyoaks with coppers, a.k.a. shit. So
controversial.
Controversy from the drummer of Stray From The Path.
He just think everything's a bit of shit, doesn't he?
He does this tweet controversial shit all the time and just causes problems on the internet, really, yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna judge it because I haven't seen it.
It's not shit.
No.
I mean,
Craig.
It is good.
It is
good. There are elements where I come away from it thinking that definitely would not have happened. Like, that can't have happened. Like, so there's the odd bit, but like, we're not in it. You need to watch TV to enjoy it, not pull it apart.
Yeah, you don't want to sit there going, oh, yeah, that's different.
So I'm very into that. And then I was also into another series, which was the same writer, which was Bodyguard.
See, I just finished watching Bodyguard.
I came in the other night and you were watching it. The last bit was fucking
so good.
Yeah, and that's the same writer as Line of Duty. So, yeah.
I'm into
Bodyguard.
You would like Line of Duty.
I'm gonna have to give Bodyguard a go.
So good. Well good, yeah.
But other than that, that's about it for me for film and TV. I watched Bohemian Rhapsody. Was the last film I watched in the cinema.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's really, really well done.
Was there controversy around Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah, I think there was quite a lot.
The director was like a bit of a rapist. Was that Bohemian Rhapsody?
I think that's been most of the Oscars films.
But I'm pretty sure he was a bit... Who was the director of that Bohemian Rhapsody?
I haven't heard that.
Let me Google it. I just spelled Bohemian Rhapsody.
There's a lot of controversy about how it wasn't Freddie in it, and it didn't
show
Freddie how it actually was.
Yeah. But I feel like that's...
But what they did...
That's a lot of the top-tier fans having a go, isn't it?
They portrayed Freddie in a really nice way, and they showed you how it all unfolded in a nice light.
Yeah.
Which was cool. Again, working in what I do, I found that film really interesting. So
it's good. And
I'm a big fan of Queen's music anyway.
Yeah, good band.
So, and they're one of the best bands ever. So,
yeah.
You know, they're still going. Yeah. They're still playing massive arena shows, you know, and their front man is
it's a testament to the music, isn't it, and how good it is.
Whereas we're not going to see acts like that anymore. So all the acts that we like now are not going to be playing...
Content, churn it out.
Massive shows.
Churn out.
They'll do what we do now, like big arena tours, and then they'll hit a point and then that'll be it.
Mm.
They won't just keep going and going and going. That's my opinion anyway.
No, I know what you mean. There was also controversy around the director of Bohemian Rhapsody. Apparently Bryan Singer was accused of sexually assaulting underage boys.
He had some of his nominations for awards stripped away from him, so he couldn't even be nominated for him anymore.
Yeah, because he was sexually assaulting young boys.
I
did not know that. That is not good.
It doesn't look 65, though. Advisable. Fair play to him.
I think the long story there is if you've got money, you can hide things away.
Mm.
For quite a long time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that all of that film stuff's been quite bad, hasn't it?
It's happened, it's quite common.
The last couple of years, it's all come out in the wash, hasn't it?
Which is just...
That's all come out in the wash at the end of the day. Which is good, because don't be fucking being a cunt, really.
Ah, fuck that, Savile.
Final word there, don't be a cunt.
Don't be a cunt.
TV for me, I watched Afterlife on Netflix, Ricky Gervais. Anyone else watched it?
Nope, I've heard about it.
It's good. I liked it. I mean, I've been a fan of Ricky Gervais. I'm always a fan of Ricky Gervais. But also, because I'm a fan of Ricky Gervais, watching Afterlife was basically like they might as well have just called the character Ricky, because he wasn't really playing a character. He was just playing himself, which is kind of what he does. But to the point where the clothes he wore is what he would wear when he's doing an interview. He took his phone out at one point. It's the phone he actually uses. I'm pretty sure it was filmed in his house. He's got his Apple Watch on, which he always wears. Like, it's exactly the same. Like, it was just like, oh, right, oh, cameras are on, shoot it. Like, you know, it wasn't... But, I mean, I think that's what Ricky's always been about. But I liked the series. A few recycled jokes in there, I noticed, from some of his previous stuff. But I think it was a funny series. It put a good light on grief. It wasn't sort of all the dooming and glooming. Some funny moments. He called a ginger kid a tiny little ginger cunt. It's funny, isn't it?
I have heard quite a lot about it, actually.
I thought it was a good series. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you've got to have your critics. Some people aren't going to like everything you do. And I suppose he's got critics, but also he's made a fucking fortune out of doing what he does.
Yeah, so fair enough.
He can do what he wants, really. Good series.
Nice.
All in all. I also watched a film on Morrissey.
Oh, okay.
On Netflix. It's called, like, I Am England or This Is England.
I toured with Morrissey at the beginning of...
It was quite good. I mean, it was really, like, I watched this film and it really just portrayed Morrissey as an extremely narcissistic man, which probably isn't too far away from what he is, really.
Yeah, no, he's definitely an odd character.
But it was quite a good film.
That's how I would describe
it. It wasn't really anything to do with the Smiths. It was just sort of his sort of rise to joining the music industry and being in a band and stuff. But yeah, it was pretty fun, pretty good. Killed a few hours of a Sunday evening.
Fair enough.
But yeah, he's a bit of a narcissist, isn't he, old
Marty? I want to watch the documentaries that are on the Fire Festival.
I've watched the one on Netflix.
Yeah,
the but Netflix we've also heard that the one on Netflix, the production company that did it, was mildly funded by the bloke that got in trouble, the bloke that ran Fire Festival. Or well, I heard that he's got some involvement.
Really know much about it at all. It's always something that I've wanted to watch and learn about.
I've watched it, and it's just like you watch it, and you're like, there's so many levels of failure as to how, and you can see why it flopped. Because they basically were like, we're going to host a festival in a place that's got absolutely no infrastructure.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to watching that. I am looking forward to watching
it. It was good. I enjoyed it. It was very interesting. I haven't seen the other one. Another one that's on like Habbo or Hobo or Hajibo.
HBO.
Yeah, I don't think it's HBO. It's like Yewu.
Hulu.
Hulu, that's one. Yeah, Hulu. Okay. I was close with Habbo, wasn't I?
It's mainly just US, though, isn't it?
Hulu. Yeah, Hulu. But the Netflix one's good.
Okay, yeah. I'll have to check it out.
Guy was an idiot. And also, there's a scene where a bloke's going to suck off a border agent for Evian.
Yeah, I remember that.
But Evian water is fucking good. So
I've been watching.
This is Bingham section. You watch your stuff.
I've been watching The Bodyguard. So that's good. Finished that the other day. What have I been watching? Been watching the original Narcos. Still watching that.
Okay,
You said mentioned that with Elden, didn't you?
On season two now. Yeah, I only really watch it on my commute. So that's my commute vibe. Yeah. Bit of Queer Eye, solid.
It wasn't as keen.
Formula One Drive to Survive. I'm a bit of an F1 fan. Not that I get to actually watch the races because I don't have Sky.
Some of them are on BBC.
No.
They're not. Is it all Sky now?
Well, it's all Sky apart from one race on Channel 4.
Which is the UK race.
And then Channel 4 do highlights. But I never get time to actually sit down and watch.
You know what's on the internet?
Yeah. It's just
so you could watch it.
It's just sitting down doing it. Yeah. I could find time. But yeah, Drive to Survive is good. It's based on the last last season of F1. Filmed it there.
Nice. So
it's pretty good. Juicy.
I used to follow the Formula One. I just don't have time anymore to think about it. I do find it interesting. I think it's a great sport. I just don't.
Even if I'm like not watching the races or watching the highlights and stuff, I still watch all like the social media clips and I've got the app on my phone, that sort of thing.
I like the technology. Keep up to date with it. I like the technology and stuff behind it.
Yeah,
but the actual race, I'm in two minds about because it's just sort of doing laps, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's a lot more sort of
it's
overtaking.
Very since they changed, calculated, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot. The science behind since they've stopped like the refueling and changing of tires and stuff.
I guess it changed from fully like petroleum and diesel engines to hybrid ones, haven't they? So
yeah, they're not allowed to refuel anymore.
Anyway, yeah, because it was just so dangerous.
Yeah, but watch it when there used to be fires and they were refueling was pretty interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
My old
driving away with a fucking like the fuel
flame,
pump
yeah,
still inside
fire
it.
Everywhere.
Yeah,
my old hairdresser, her son used to actually be the mechanic for Lewis Hamilton.
Mm. Back home, there's a videographer who lives up the street who does Formula E.
Okay, Tom's been working on a lot for my housemate Tom. He's been working on the Formula E stuff with his company.
Solid. So.
Motor racing, bringing everyone together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All about it.
Lovely.
I think I've found my shit tweet.
Have you found your shit tweet? What's the feature called?
The feature is Bullshit Tweet of Late.
Bullshit Tweet of Late.
It's not the most bullshit tweet I've ever found. And
who tweeted it? We're going to call them out.
I've just lost it. Brilliant.
We're now losing listeners with this.
Well, you know.
Because not only are we slagging them off, but we're going to slag their friends off as well.
Obviously, Prodigy died. Yeah. Not Prodigy, just not the whole band at once.
Keith.
Just Keith. Keith died.
Fucking great guy.
So when I found it, because it just dropped off my phone. Brilliant. Where is it?
Next time, screenshot the tweet so we can find it quicker.
Easy money.
Do a link or something.
It was a picture of greenhouse fumigator. In a can, with the caption, "I'm the trouble starter." So I'm a trouble starter, greenhouse fumigator. That's my bullshit tweet of late.
It's not bullshit though. That's good.
Not necessarily funny. Bullshit. It's not just bullshit. It's just shit content.
Bullshit. Yeah, it's funny.
It's awful.
It's, yeah, it's not a good joke, but it's a bit, it makes you smile if you're a bit.
There
sad.
Is also another pretty funny one. Where is it? Let's
so get back to that. This podcast is now just reading out tweets.
Ah, so this one is a guy on a subway dressed as a tomato, with the caption "Why in the world is there a tomato on the train?" Someone else has quote tweeted it saying, "Because it's the subway."
Fuck off.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. That's bullshit tweet of late.
I feel like you should probably have been a bit more prepared.
Yeah.
Can you not... I thought we were calling out the people that were tweeting it as well, so I could slag
them
off.
Yeah, I mean, the one... Maybe if we find out actually bullshit tweets, they were just funny.
What are we thinking bullshit tweets? Like racists and idiots?
Scumbag ones, but yeah, I was looking through my likes, so if it's someone's a scumbag, I'm not really going to like it.
True.
So for tomorrow's podcast, which will come out at some point after this one...
We'll find some scumbags.
We'll find some scumbags.
And slag them off.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Cool.
Yeah. So as a taste of what's to come.
Tomatoey taste.
Yeah.
A bad taste.
Yeah. It really
I'm joking,
that,
I'm joking.
That has left a sour
not
taste
bad,
in our
not
mouth.
A bad taste,
has left a sour
do you remember
taste.
When subways used to be worth your money, though?
I remember when I used to enjoy going to Subway.
Yeah, and now it's
and
just
now
like.
If I go
oh.
into a garage which sells Subway, like, you know, you get petrol stations which
yeah.
have Subway. I'm like, that
I've
smell
never,
is.
I've never seen a petrol station with a Subway in it, actually.
When you drive
there's a BP.
All around the world and the country,
yeah.
you come across quite
you come
a few
across some fucking interesting sites,
interesting service stations.
There's a BP garage near Bramall Lane in Sheffield,
yeah,
which is like 24 hours. It's got a Subway inside it, and I'm pretty sure it's got a Costa inside it as well.
That's mad.
Not even that big. It's just got it, fucking got it.
What
all.
I really like is the petrol stations that after a certain time at night you can't go inside.
Yeah.
So you just have to just talk through the window to the bloke?
Wickham BP, where you just have to go and speak to a box, and then have to wait, they have to go away for 10 minutes
yeah,
and find
and then,
your
like,
item.
I remember I was at one once, and this bloke asked for a bottle of water, wasn't specific about it, sent the guy back 4 times because it wasn't the right bottle of water. Just tell the cunt you wanted smart water. Just tell him. You want 500ml bottle of smart water, not fucking all water.
Or when people
prick.
Look like you're in the queue for the night pay, and people ooh. Will order like... 2 packets of crisps, and then they want something else.
Yeah.
And then they want something else.
Well, actually, no, if you're going to get me kettle chips, I might as well have a bit of dip with that one. Or
the same as ordering at a bar, though. Just give me the whole fucking order. I'll put it in the till. I'll go back to the till and look at the till rather than speaking to you again, you little prick.
Like some etiquette about night pay that you're only allowed
to buy petrol and a Kit Kat.
And a Kit Kat,
yeah. Yeah, maybe an energy drink.
Wine gums.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't.
Fruit pastels.
Yeah,
you're only allowed
boiled sweets
or,
in a tin.
Or you're allowed one sweep of the store, so he's allowed to go once.
But or yeah. you just pay, like, say your petrol's 30 quid, you pay him 34 quid, and he gets you £4 of just unknown goods. So yeah. he just gives you 4 quid
I mean,
worth of goods.
That could be pretty unuseful.
That'd be intense. It'd be intense, though, wouldn't
not
it?
Not useful at all. I don't know if unuseful is a word, but...
You might get some good shit out of it. You might get something you haven't had in
a while. I think it'd be interesting.
You might get you like a Kinder Bueno and you haven't had one of them in weeks. You go, fuck, I love these.
Buenos are good.
Exactly.
I like the white chocolate ones.
The white chocolate Kinder Buenos.
But I have to say the dark chocolate ones are
so
good too.
So you're guessing that we're now talking about chocolate bars. Have we run out of things?
We haven't even spoke about how we met, really.
To talk about.
Should we do it? Yeah, let's do a little gloss of how we met.
Rewind. So you went to Bucks University, Jake?
Well, yeah, I did go to Bucks University.
As did I.
We all did. So that's where we met in, and we all worked in the student union there
yeah.
at some point.
Yeah.
In various roles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bingham was on the bar. I did a bit of events crew and teching. You
did,
were a tech.
I was a tech for 3 or 4 years. 4 years?
4 years.
Yeah, because I stayed on after I'd left uni and I did another year.
Oh, I didn't know. Didn't know that. What, like, I was just working there?
Yeah, doing a bit of training, maintenance. I did one day of maintenance and then I did sort of the training. And then I did like the unisex shows.
Oh, right. Well, the lighting design
shows.
And stuff like that. Yeah. So that's what, yeah. When I was teching, it was Paul doing the unisex line.
Paul kind of took it over from me, as in Paul took over everything. Another friend of ours that we went to uni with took. Who, you should get him on the podcast.
Possible future guest.
I spoke to him about this about twice this week now. So, well, yeah, it's in the way.
He would be quite a good podcast.
He might enjoy the brownies as well.
He's a funny character. Mm.
Interesting guy, yeah. Funny chap.
Funny guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we met sort of in there.
Yeah, so university friends, I guess.
No sock. We met at the Edinburgh trip in 2014.
Yeah, so when I was at uni, I was heavily involved in the snowboarding and skiing society from day one, basically, from freshers first. So I went on to be the treasurer of Snow Sock in my second year and the president in my third year. So
the fun fact here is that you got that club to Society of the Year or something like that.
Yeah, Sports Team of the Year.
And I got Film Sock to Society of the Year.
There you go.
But what happened to Film Sock after you left Bingham, mate?
Yeah, but what happened to Snow Sock after Jake left?
Fucking hell. Yeah. Fell apart, mate.
There you go.
Films like even exist, you put
your heart into it, give it to somebody else, they fuck it up.
Societies are quite hard to maintain. Like, I was involved with Snow Sock for sort of 3 years, and it went up and down over the years, unless you put a lot of work into it.
A bit like the mountains.
Mm. Very much like the mountains.
For sake.
But it was hard to keep it going, actually. Yeah. It was you had to promote it, and it had to be I could have spent more time on Snow Sock and working at the SU than I did actually on my degree. In fact, I probably did.
I'm sure I 100% spent more time working at the SU than I did my degree in the last year.
Yeah, well, between Snow Sock and working at the SU and sort of freelancing already in the industry, like, my degree was definitely not the priority, but
then, as I always say, like, with uni, it's not really the degree at the end of the day, is it? What did you get? What was your degree in?
Music and live event management.
I suppose you're using that quite a lot then,
in a way. Yeah, but I don't really use the much paper side of what I actually did. But I know a lot of things because of the course I did, which is good. I would say that the course was useful to me now that I'm working in the industry. Yeah. I mean, solely the course is not the reason why. But university as an experience is 100%.
Yeah, I recommend it to everyone, because even if you don't use what you studied in, it's the people you meet, it's the experiences you have.
Like, I met all you guys.
Yeah.
Fucking
like
great.
James Eldon, Tom McEwen, who's my flatmate I live with now. A lot of other friends. Adam Blackster does some stuff for me now. We work together on some projects. And so I met all of those guys. It also got me into touring. So my first touring act was Foxes, who I met, the tour manager of.
Yeah, I remember this.
In the SU. And I then met other people and other lighting designers and went on to work for them. And that leads to another. And that's how I've ended up working for George Ezra. So, none of that would have happened if I hadn't have gone to university. So.
Yeah, it is it's more than just a degree and a bit of paper at the end of the day, isn't it? It's more than just, because we probably know plenty of people that just sort of went to uni, went to the lectures, did the coursework, went home, did the essay, went there, and they stopped, and they're not doing anything.
They don't work, they work in completely different, they either work in completely different walks of life, and are doing really well at it, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
Because they've taken their degree away and they've got a degree and now they've got a really good job. But there's a lot of people that don't have good jobs that I went to uni with that either work in bars still or don't know what they're doing still. Which is a shame, but I guess it's...
You get out what you put in.
Yeah.
I suppose it's like anything in life, isn't it? If you put the effort in, you'll get something pretty rewarding.
I would say that I very much enjoy life now, and I'm very happy with how my life is at the moment. But uni and the 3 to 4 years I lived in High Wycombe were the best 3 to 4 years of my life to date. Like, we had a laugh. It was a lot of fun. I met a lot of people. Learned a lot of lessons, you know, had my first flat, all of that. So
If you don't take anything away from uni, the independence is the one thing that will stay with you forever, really, isn't it?
Uni was top notch.
Good shit.
Experiences, yeah. It was good.
Strong.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. So yeah, that's how we met. Mm-hmm. Now you're going on doing mad shit.
Yeah.
Mad shit.
That's another thing. How did you get the job of George Ezra then? Because I know you said you got it through sort of knowing people who know people.
Well, it's just...
Did someone just approach you and say...
So the tour manager that works on George Ezra now, I was chatting to him about something else, actually, and he asked me to have a look at some drawings for it because he'd recently taken the project on and... Could I help him get a few bits and bobs in place if he would pay me to do it? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I'll help you have a look at it and have a look at the drawings and do some advance work on it for you. And then kind of one thing led to another. And then when I actually got stuck into it, we noticed we were doing like Brixton Academy, Manchester Apollo, Usher Hall in Edinburgh. So like venues that need touring production, you have to. Yeah. Well, not so much that, but venues that need you to take production with you. So once you get to that point, and like if you're doing it for one show, then you just get the promoter to bring it in locally because that's the most cost effective way of doing it. But if you're doing three or four shows, it's more cost effective to hire it and take it with you. So
and you know it's all there.
Well, yeah, and it's your system, and you know it's there, but. And then, so once you get into that and start to move two trucks of gear around, you really need someone to look after it that isn't band focused. I sort of rang him one day and said, "Well, why don't I come out on it? Because I obviously have knowledge of building lighting rigs, can build lighting rigs, I'm competent in building lighting rigs." So I said to him, "Instead of you getting a lighting tech from the supplier, why don't you tell the supplier that I'm going to build it and then I'll come out on the tour for 2 weeks and then we'll see how it goes." And there was only, at this point, there was only shows in the calendar up until November last year. Because this was before Shotgun was released.
Yeah.
And this was around the time that Paradise had been released. So... we did that. I went out on the tour, met all the guys, built the lighting rig for 5 shows. And then...
Were you opping or just building?
Just doing the tech side of it. And then it went to America and I had already committed to some other stuff. So I was like, I can't come to America. But I will continue to do the advance for you if that's what you want me to do. And then... did the advance, and then by that point when we got back to America, it was agreed that I could be the production manager and continue it. And basically it was good for me and it was good for them because they needed someone to come in and look after it. They didn't want someone to pay someone like top production manager rates at that stage because it was only a couple of trucks and it was no one really knew what direction it was going to go in.
It was good for them
to have a young, up-and-coming guy that was interested in doing production, and that's the route I wanted to go down. So it kind of worked for everyone. So it was decided at that point that I was to become the production manager, and then it just got massive.
It's just, grown from there.
All of a sudden. So I'm obviously grateful to Trevor and the guys that gave me the opportunity to do it, like his management and George himself. So, but I guess I took the opportunity and ran with it, and I've been really lucky to be sat in the position today because I could have ran with it up until the Wembley show last year, and it's still a good level for me to have come out of working at 25, but then for it to have gone even further to the next level where we're 10 trucks of production, we're touring into festivals, headlining shows.
Yeah.
You know, so, I'm really lucky. But
yeah,
that all stems from uni. So the bands and the people that I met, I wouldn't have met unless I'd gone to uni and...
worked at the venue.
Worked on the other tours and worked at the venue and stuff. So because for me to be able to do this role, I need to know a lot of people. So...
yeah.
because now we're into like 50 crew. A lot of the 50 crew,
Do you tour? How many people do you tour?
There's about 75 of us in the touring party. So between 40 and 50 crew, 10 band, 15 drivers.
Yeah, and then you book however many crew, like local.
And then it's 50 local crew on top of that.
So, fucking hell. Big.
But for me to be like, I had to put our team together. So, like, as in the core team and George's crew have always been there since I came in. So I didn't choose, like, those guys were in place, like the front of house engineer and monitor engineer, backline techs, you know, they've. But in terms of the additional production team, sort of riggers, carpenters, video techs, lighting techs, you got to have contacts and suppliers that you can turn to. And I'm lucky enough to have all of those contacts and have that relationship with the suppliers from working on all of the projects collectively that I've worked on over the years. So to be where I am today is basically all because of uni, and I'm really lucky. But it's all about opportunity, and when you're given the opportunities, you've got to take them. You've got to run with them.
Yeah, never turn it down.
Never turn it down. Only turn it down if
you're
you
already
can't,
booked. Yeah, don't double
do
book.
It.
That's
don't
just make yourself look like
or
a
don't
trap.
Take too much on, because like I've got a lot on at the moment, and some would say that I've got too much on, but I would say that I'm maxed out, but I'm still comfortable.
If you're able to balance it with your own like personal life, then I'd say you're at a good level.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, work's kind of taken over, but it's because of the time of year we're in. You know, we're in April now. We're going into a really busy summer.
Yeah,
and then you know what? After September, when the campaign quiets down, I'm not going to take much on. I say this at the moment. Give me a call in September. I'll let you know how it's going. But
we'll do a follow-up then.
I'm planning to go on holiday over Christmas. I'm going to try and take some time off between September and Christmas, basically.
Solid. Well-deserved.
Nice.
A well-needed break.
Yeah. There we go.
Happy days.
Should we wrap?
Should we wrap, yeah?
Yeah.
Finish it up.
So that's me. Thank you very much.
That is Jake Furnham in about an hour and a half, I'd say. We'll probably get this one down to. Jake Furnham in an hour and a half. Interesting guy. Good times.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for having
me. It's been a pleasure. I've never done a podcast before, so it was.
I'm glad that we were able to break your podginity.
It was. Didn't know what to expect, but it's been cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate.
Bloody hell, that was great, wasn't it?
That was low, fucking hell.
Oh.
I love that. Did you? Yeah, if you did, give us a review.
Very technical chats, but very good information, and great to see that. Another fellow books friend
alumni
is doing so well.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. Did you like it, James?
I did, yeah.
Did you like it, Jake?
Yeah, I liked it.
Anyway, so that was the end of episode 5. And we're actually currently in the works of producing a new miniature podcast, but it's not really that goes alongside the main podcast,
just sort of,
but in between other episodes,
fill in the gaps.
We've got a name for it, but we're not going to tell you the name yet.
More when it comes out.
If you're another fellow, as we always say, if you want to be a guest, let us know.
If you know anybody who could be a good guest,
let us know. And there's potential updates on social media for us.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Oh, stay tuned indeed. Well, that was Jake Furnham, podcast number 5.
Five, done and dusted.
Thanks for listening. Give us some nice reviews if you've got a spare minute.
Yeah.
Much love. And we should probably point out too that you can now vote for any podcast of your choice, namely ours, on the British
Internet
Podcast Awards.
Which is on the internet.
Which is on the internet. Let me just find
where it is. We'll put the link on the social medias.
You'll probably cut all of this anyway, and it'll just be